This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott, reminding you that Bloomberg Government is the only information service provider in Washington that focuses on the business impact of government actions. That's key. Business impact all day, every day. It's what we do. You'll find the fruits of our labor at bgov.com. We've partnered with Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, bringing that concept right here to the airwaves every Thursday at 11 and Fridays at 2:30. You need more? Check us out, www.bgov.com. Today on Capital Impact, we're bringing the world of defense, and specifically defense contracting, into focus. We've got Peter Brusso, a PhD candidate. He's also a member of the oh-so-important Bloomberg Government Data Team. He's kind of done some head-scratching analysis, looking at some presidential contribution data from employees of government contractors. You'll be surprised where that money is being spent. He'll be here a little later. But we begin the day by examining the world of cybersecurity, specifically defense cybersecurity, and the opportunities contained therein. Jason Wilson is here. How are you, Jason?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. He's a federal technology analyst, and part one of his two-part BGov study entitled Trends in the $1.8 Billion Market for Defense Cybersecurity is out. People are reading it. We're going to talk to him about that. He's joined by Sopan Shah, a veteran of the program. Hi, Sopan.
Hello again.
Hello again. She's a financial analyst with an eye towards the defense world. So she's also authored a new study entitled Potential Targets, Companies on Lucrative Macs Attract Attention. Thank you both for being part of the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So cybersecurity, kind of a catch-all for a lot of things IT-related, especially in the government space. Jason, give me a minute and just kind of explain what cybersecurity actually is, or how we've redefined it, I should say.
Well, for the purpose of the study, Bloomberg Government decided to characterize cybersecurity under three buckets. So one is information assurance. So that's anywhere between setting standards for 10 to 11 character passwords or biometric sort of like fingerprint access to computers. And then the next bucket was information security. And information security we're defining as the technologies of cybersecurity. So antivirus software and also technologies to sense intruders on the networks, mm-hmm. which leads me to the next bucket, which is computer network operations. So that's sort of the day-to-day monitoring of networks, making sure that hackers aren't breaking in, stealing important classified or even unclassified but sensitive information.
One interesting thing, and I'm glad the two of you are here together, because we're talking about a lot of money here, money that some say is being spent, but according to your latest study, Jason, and the redefinition of cybersecurity, the government is saying upwards of $5 billion, but you've got about $1.8 billion. Explain.
That's correct. So basically what we did is we targeted specific contracts. Mainly, we wanted to leave out the contracts that provide for network infrastructures, so like Ethernet cables, routers, things like that. And that really inflates the numbers. And so we developed a methodology to pull from specific keywords in contract descriptions. And that keyword list we developed in coordination with cybersecurity professionals, government, and also defense contractors and academics in the field.
So when looking at this space kind of graphically in the study, and you can see it clearly from 2007 on, everything's safe to say it's pretty flat?
That is correct.
That's correct. There are, however, ebbs and flows, so to speak, within the space itself. Explain the difference or the fluctuations.
Well, the overall amount being spent each year is about $1.8 billion. Inside of that spending, so the three spending buckets, we saw roughly a 48% increase from fiscal 2007 to fiscal 2011 in computer network operations spending. So that's about $220 million.
And there's also another aspect to this cybersecurity market, right? So there's the direct spending that Jason outlined in his study. But there are also internal capabilities that companies will need in order to comply with cybersecurity policies that the government may put out for any companies that do business with it. Isn't that right?
That's correct. So each year or over multiple periods of time during the year, defense agencies and also the federal government, they're putting out new guidelines because cyber threats are ever-evolving, and so they need to keep pace with it. And we saw an interesting trend that with a release or a release of a new policy or the announcement for public comment on a draft policy, that there were spikes in spending about 3 to 4 months directly afterwards. As these policies are being put out to counter emerging threats, contractors will have to meet the needs, meet these requirements. And so that's either hiring on new individuals that have the skill set or possibly buying up companies that would be able to fill that need.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're speaking with Jason Wilson, federal business analyst with BGov and author of a new study, Trends in the $1.8 Billion Market for Defense Cyber Study. And Sopan Shah is here with us as well. She's an analyst with BGov, whose latest study, Potential Targets, Companies on Lucrative Macs Attract Attention, is also available now on BGov. Sopan, we're talking about a flat marketplace for the most part. Organic growth is something that probably isn't going to happen at this point. It may happen, but it'll be tougher than like a merger or an acquisition. So looking at that and your study, how are people going to better themselves or better the company themselves?
Well, although organic growth in the cybersecurity market for the Department of Defense is flat, there's also an entire civilian market out there that we have to keep in mind, and a lot of contractors are making acquisitions that will well position them in that other the other side of the market. Mm-hmm. So, for example, CACI bought Paradigm in September of 2011 to specifically target the civilian cyber market, which includes FEMA, the Department of Energy, and Treasury. So although DOD may not be a lucrative market, cybersecurity, more broadly defined, may provide some contractors with that growth. There's also the point I made earlier about building internal capabilities. So acquiring a company to incorporate their skill sets into your own networks to make sure that they comply with government standards or are just safe business practices. So there's that aspect as well.
One big contract that I found out there, or the potential for merger, and I want to preface that by saying potential for merger, because obviously these are just things that we've identified that could work, but none of the companies are actually for sale that we know of, or we don't know if anybody wants to buy anything, that kind of thing. I definitely want to put that stamp on that disclaimer. But Worldwide Protective Services, it's out there in September of 2010. The State Department picked out 8 companies, taking this straight from your study, for its $10 billion Worldwide Protective Services contract. And you've got some companies out here that would make sense to potentially get together, or those that are actually in the space itself and could pick up a lot of money should they decide to jump on another Mac, if they could.
Right. And the multiple award contract, the Worldwide Protective Services you mentioned, it saw an increase in sales from 2010 to 2011, and that's driven by, in part, the pullback from the Department of Defense in Iraq and Afghanistan, right? So as the military reduces its presence, you're going to see more security personnel located overseas. So that's part of what's driving the growth. And the businesses that have played a part in the security personnel sort of overseas operations, there is a large degree of risk involved in that space. And as you said, Ellen, the companies that play there may be some synergies in getting together or merging. And one of the companies on a Worldwide Protective Services contract is a sort of not joint venture specifically, but a blend of security personnel companies that created a bid specifically for the contract. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing that type of activity in the industry.
So, Jason, you actually worked with Booz Allen Hamilton at one point.
That is correct.
In a prior life.
Yes.
And looking at the your study itself, the study entitled Trends in the $1.8 Billion Market for Defense Cybersecurity, Booz Allen Hamilton seems to be a big winner.
That is correct.
Across the board.
That is correct. Primarily because of two contracts, Serviac and IATAC. And those are sole source contracts that the government can just order off of as much as they want. that's how the federal government has been, mainly the Defense Department has been using to procure cybersecurity goods and services.
So it's like a fishing license. You get that license, you go out there and catch as many fish as you possibly can until the thing expires.
That is correct, yes.
Very good. So, Sopin, looking at your study once again, by the way, it's entitled Potential Targets, Companies on Lucrative Macs Attract Attention, and I'm getting word that it is not yet available on BGov, but it will be available shortly. So BGov.com is the place to go check. Let's take a look at some of these contracts again. One of the big ones that I can see out there is one where the Army has some stuff going on. It's ITEST 2S companies. Give us some background on that and specifically with an eye toward cybersecurity.
Sure. Well, ITEST 2S, along with a couple of the other multiple award contracts that I examined in the study, are for IT services, and they include Alliant, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, ESD, Enterprise System Development, and a number of companies on those multiple award contracts cite cybersecurity as a service they provide. And that list includes Pragmatics Incorporated, STG Incorporated, Dynamics Research Corporation, just a sampling of the few of the companies that say they provide cybersecurity. And we've seen multiple award contracts as a vehicle for the government to purchase cybersecurity services. And Jason's study actually discusses that very fact.
Yeah, and ITES 2S actually has seen significant growth over the 5 years from 2007 to 2011, the study, purchasing cybersecurity products.
I should point out as well that the Macs we examine in detail in the study are those that meet a number of criteria. Mm-hmm. So the first criteria is that they have over $500 million in sales in fiscal 2011. And the second criteria, to Jason's point, is that they've shown growth in sales from fiscal 2010 to fiscal 2011.
This ITEST, that's a tough one to say. ITEST 2S services.
Some of them have really strange
names. And it's Information Technology Enterprise Solutions 2 Services is the actual full name. Second largest of the seven Macs in the Army's Information Technology Enterprise Solutions 2, if you will. We're looking at $1.83 billion. I'm wondering, and you may or may not know, and I hate to put you on the spot like this, as we take a look at cybersecurity and the redefinition that we've given, how much of that $1.83 billion is actually something that would fall into our buckets?
Depending on what year you're looking at.
Good point.
In 2011, ITES 2S actually spent about $120 million mm-hmm. on cybersecurity, but that shows a growth from $5 million in 2007. Significant growth over
years. Yeah, over 5 years. You're right. Good point. One other one that I want to take a look at, if we have a real quick second, Alliant, a government-wide technology services contract with 58 participating companies, fourth largest value. That's big stuff.
It is. And the fourth largest, I should caveat, that it is of the seven Macs that met some of the criteria that
correct.
I mentioned earlier. And 58 companies is a lot. And of the Macs I examined in the study, that contract had the greatest number of companies that I focus on specifically. And we're seeing a trend where the government will award that initial award in a multiple award contract to more and more companies, so that they have selection power almost mm-hmm. when it comes time to choose who gets a task order,
right.
Specifically in small businesses, right? So let's say a small business on a multiple award contract is acquired. They may no longer be a small business, and that agency wants to meet its small business goals. So having more companies on the list, if you will, of the initial award allows for the government to say, hey, never mind. We'll just pick this other company.
We'll just go with someone else that'll work better for us.
Representative of a larger trend.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Sopin, thank you very much. Jason Wilson is his name, federal business analyst with BGov. The study is called Trends in the $1.8 Billion Market for Defense Cybersecurity. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Sopin, I want you to stick around because I'm going to bring somebody in who is going to discuss defense contractor contributions to presidential campaigns. Joining us now here in the studio is a man who is a PhD candidate, making me feel really, really, really inferior. He's also a data analyst, works on the VGov data team here at Bloomberg Government. His name is Peter Brusso. Peter, how are you?
Fantastic.
Peter, one of the things that, and Sopin is still here with me too. Hi, Sopin.
Hello.
Hi. So one of the things that we thought would be kind of interesting, and you kind of brought this to our attention a little earlier this week, and I got to tell you, it was head-scratching interesting. As we talk about defense contracting, and it's a presidential election year, money can be very telling. As we look to an election year, whether it be telling or just plain interesting as to where it's going, you examined a bunch of donations by employees at some of the top government contractors. What did you find?
Sure. So what we did is we looked at the top five government contractors who received more than $10 billion in federal contracts in the last fiscal year. And what we found was really quite interesting. The Northrop Grumman donated over $500,000 in the current cycle. General Dynamics gave just around $320,000. Boeing donated $298,000. Lockheed Martin gave around $200,000. And finally, Raytheon donated a mere $159,000. It's a relatively small amount of money. And what was interesting about it is most of the money didn't go to presidential candidates. Only about 20 to 30% went to those kind of candidates.
Where did the rest of the money go, just out of curiosity?
Most of the money went to congressional candidates. Buck McKeon, who, of course, we know chairs the Armed Services Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, was one of the major recipients of campaign contributions, which sort of makes sense as you think about government contracts and military contracts. The House Committee on Armed Services has a definitive say on how that money is allocated, and it's beneficial for companies with $10 billion government contracts to stand on the good side of the chairman of the Armed Services Committee.
Sure, sure. That makes sense, especially in the defense world.
I mean, absolutely.
I can see that why that would be a big thing to do.
Peter, in your findings, I thought I saw something interesting about geographic location, right, in that Raytheon contributed the most to a Massachusetts congressman?
Actually, donated the most to Mitt Romney, the Massachusetts nominee for president.
Oh, okay, excellent. And so, Raytheon is based in Waltham, Massachusetts. So were there other geographic relationships that you discovered?
It's not really a geographic thing per se. It's more of a history of donations. Raytheon was a huge contributor to John McCain in 2008. And so Raytheon has this affinity for Republican presidential candidates. And what we noticed when we looked at Boeing is Boeing was a major contributor to President Obama in his election in 2008. Where there was massive amounts of money going there. For example, Boeing donated $169,000 to Obama for America in 2008. So far, they've only given about $16,000 to President Obama. So there's definitely room for growth. That if you're the Obama campaign fundraiser, you should make some phone calls out to Seattle, Washington, to ask where are the donations.
So as we're looking and following the trail of money, as we're following the trail of donations made by employees at the top five government contractors, Peter Brusso is here, along with Sopin Shah. My name's Alan Scott. Who got the most money? Was it Obama? Was it Romney? Who walked away the big winner?
So this is the real head scratcher. It was actually Congressman Ron Paul from Texas, who has now dropped out of the Republican race. Well, he hasn't dropped out. He has suspended his campaign. For all intents and purposes, he has stopped campaigning. And he received more money than both President Obama and Governor Romney.
Okay, that is truly a head-scratcher, because moments ago, I just saw Engineer Mike in the other room actually lean back and go, whoa, wait a minute, he wasn't even on the list. So that doesn't make any sense to us.
It's sort of a head-scratcher to us as well. And the thing to keep in mind is people donate for different reasons.
Right.
If you're a government contractor, I would think, again, I'm not advocating anyone donate, so we're not creating political speech here.
Sure.
I think donating to Ron Paul would probably be the worst decision you could make. Congressman Paul has gone on record as saying that he wants to cut government contractors, pull out our military out of Europe and other places throughout the world. And when you wind up reducing the size of the military, you wind up not needing as much missiles, aircraft, other things that Boeing, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin provide. So in this case, people are donating for reasons that are not necessarily in their economic interest. Now, you know, as I said, right now, as of the last reports, Ron Paul is dominating this field. But once the Obama campaign gets fully up to speed, and as soon as the Romney campaign gets up to speed, I think we'll quickly see the same amount of money that was donated in 2008 going to both the major nominee for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I think it's just a matter of it's just too early right now.
Sopin, are you as surprised as I am about the
that is a bit of a surprising finding. But, Peter, as you said, people, employees of these corporations, probably donate money for a myriad of reasons, some of which may not be economic in nature.
And one of the things we know is that these aren't people who are maxing out to the candidates yet. These are small donations coming together. And small donors tend to be motivated by different reasons than large donors. I think when we start seeing the $2,500 donations roll in from to Obama or to Romney and the $30,800 that's being donated to the political parties, I think the story would change. But I think we're just a little bit too early right now.
Is there any, just out of curiosity, any money being sent off to super PACs? Is there any activity out there?
So super PACs is sort of the big question. There's about 300 of these new super PACs mm-hmm. out there. And for those who might not be familiar, super PACs are allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money advocating for political speech. And unlike candidate committees, corporations can donate directly to them. One of the things that we're seeing is that generally it's small family-owned businesses that are doing the direct corporate contributions or affluent people on their own. The single biggest donor to the any super PAC is Sheldon Adelstein, who's donated between he and his wife like $15 million to the Newt Gingrich super PAC. And Adelstein is the head of the Sands Corporation out in Las Vegas. You don't see any of these top five contractors getting mm-hmm. involved at all with this. I think part of that is this is still unsettled law. There's a lot of question about who's reporting, how they're reporting, and whether or not there's investigation of super PACs. If you're a government contractor, you don't want to get in the middle of unsettled campaign finance law.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
As you said, Peter, these are donations made officially as a corporation, right?
You can donate from the general treasury of the corporation. And we did see in Minnesota, for example, Best Buy and Target made donations to the Republican gubernatorial candidate's party to help his reelection, and they wound up actually having issues where Target had a marching band come in to protest their corporate donations, and Best Buy had similar boycotts. And so corporations quickly saw that we don't want to be involved in this. It's going to hurt our bottom line.
And especially a company that does business directly with the government,
sure,
right, as a major source of revenue.
And there's currently Senator Schumer is pushing through the Disclose Act right now through the Senate. It's probably not going to go anywhere. Even if it passes the Senate, it's going to fail in the House. Would actually require more disclosure of how money is spent internally within a company that they don't have to currently disclose. And that's the type of transparency that companies don't want to give up just for the purpose of donating to a campaign.
Mm-hmm. As we continue to head down this path, what's next in this presidential cycle? Where are we going next?
This is going to be great. We're going to have new reports coming out later this month. Mm-hmm. Every pundit, every politician is saying this is going to be a $1 billion campaign. And President Obama raised $750 million in the 2008 election. That was record-breaking. This is the first time we've had a privately funded election since 1972. And there's no reason to suspect that Obama won't hit the $1 billion mark. And with Governor Romney, he can spend his own personal money.
Sure.
So easily, whatever Obama raises, Romney can match dollar for dollar.
Amazing. I mean, when you really sit back and think about the magnitude of the money that's being spent.
Well, we did some work. We looked at, so it's a $1 billion campaign.
Right.
It looked at the revenue, and you look at Pfizer. Pfizer spent $10 billion last year in advertising. So if Pfizer spends $10 billion and we spend $1 billion running advertising for the leader of the free world, there's some kind of disconnect there.
His name is Peter Brusso. Peter, will you come back and update us on when the money gets to that closer to that $1 billion mark?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Sopin Shah is here as well. Thank you very much for joining us. Her latest study, Potential Targets, Companies on Lucrative Max Attract Attention, will be available soon on BGov.com. I want to thank Jason Wilson, whose study, Trends in the $1.8 billion Market for Defense Cybersecurity, that's available now on BGov. We are pretty much done. You can follow us on Twitter, if you'd like, at BloombergGov. We'll get together again next Thursday, 11 a.m., right here on 1500 a.m. I promise you, we'll have plenty more to say about the business impact government actions. For Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, I'm Alan Scott.